Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
All right, Cindy, so you can start the speed round. We're talking about Italian wine regions and
exciting.
And trying to give people some things they should know about each one.
So we're moving down the west coast of Italy, so Umbria is the next region.
Well, that's the one non-coastal region. It's a landlocked
region.
It's
inland.
Yeah, in the center of Italy there. And rich cooking. Sangiovese and Sagrantino are the two grapes you see the most. Sangiovese, not maybe as interesting for the most part as a lot of the Tuscan Sangiovese. Sagrantino has a great, big, rich, dense, tannic red wine, meaning that sort of chalky stuff that happens in the side of your mouth happens big time.
Okay.
That historically was a church wine that was made a little bit sweet and strong, like a late harvest. And in 1971, Antonelli was the first producer to actually produce it commercially and dry, not for the church. But all of the famous abbeys and monasteries and whatnot along the spine of hills, there are lots of famous monasteries and like Assisi is there with a famous abbey. And so the wine for the church is a big tradition in Umbria. And that rich cooking, but it's interesting. That's a very modern change.
Okay, and then Lazio is the next region.
Lazio is the region where you find Rome, and it's funny. First wine I think of in Lazio because you can grow a lot of stuff, maybe not super interesting stuff, but I always think of Frascati, which is a not particularly noble white wine that's like young and fresh and easy. But I always think of Rome as being a city where they do great fried food.
Right.
You know. And Frascati is one of these like whites that's like fresh and kind of crispy fruity. It's sort of like if you took Grace Sancerre and you're going to make it for a kid to understand, you know, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, definitely. And I think
it's just refreshing and you want it and it's like 12-13% alcohol. It's not too much and you want it cold and like for fried chicken, let me have cold Frascati.
There you go. That's good. It sounds good.
And it's not expensive.
And I think one of the great things about Rome is when you're traveling, it's such a comfortable city, big city. You know, I'm not always comfortable in cities. I'd rather be in the country. And it's just, there's something, especially I think about being there in the summertime. It's just, you feel the sun and it just feels like a golden city. There's something very special about Rome. So that's, we've had lots of good fried food there. So that's interesting that you brought that up.
Yeah, as much as I like to eat healthy, that's not the place for
it. Right. And Campania is such a beautiful region as well.
Campania is a bigger wine region with a longer tradition than most people realize. Campania was super important to a lot of the wealth of Rome. That whole coast, you know, that everyone's other home, their summer home for a lot of patricians in that culture. We're all along there. I mean, the amount of money that was, when I say money, like, you know, humans that owned a lot of things, that had a lot of money, that were in Pompeii and Herculaneum when the volcano happened, the amount of money that went away, the economic cost of that was giant. That region was famous for wine probably before any other region of Italy. You know, 2,000 years ago, the most famous things were coming from there and also from Molise. The big red to know is Tarausi, in the Arpinia zone, and that's a big, spicy, almost piney red wine that wants meat. There's some red wine that you can put with fish, no problem. This is the opposite of that.
There
are whites as well, mostly hillside grown whites that are relatively clean and firm. They do great with bacalao, which is the seafood tradition in the hills. The salt cod, especially the fried salt cod.
That's
the kind of thing. That and preserved tomatoes and like fresh made cheese from a farm up in the hills.
That sounds good.
With Lacrimae Christi, which is a white wine from there's an appellation that literally means the tears of Christ. I think they talk about salesmen. When they're describing the site of the wine, is like the wine from this site is like the tears of Christ. So special.
Wow.
Like that's maybe that's overselling it, but they're pretty tasty and great for the kind of meal that I described.
And Basilicata?
Basilicata is a super interesting mountainous region, and maybe in its way very up and coming as far as the quality of the wine that's being grown. Vulture, the volcano that's there, there are lots of wineries in the foothills there and a couple of appellations there, and they're growing big, rich, interesting reds up in those hills, and they're not a big piece of money, and they're making them a lot better than they were even 10 years ago.
That's exciting.
So I think that's kind of, keep your eye on what comes out of Basilicata.
Okay. And then Calabria?
Calabria is super interesting because you definitely have distinctly different regions, even for the grapes that are, the grape that's most important for red is Gallopo. And Gallopo is one of these ancient grapes that came from Mesopotamia that's been growing in that area. It's a very Greek-influenced area historically. As far as the bloodlines of the people that have been there for a long time. Gallopo and Magliopo. Magliopo is actually a different older name for a version of Syrah that eventually is the one that went to France, that's up in the Rhone Valley and became very famous up there. But you see, it's very easy to pick that out in the vineyard because it, unlike a lot of the Mediterranean-adapted grapes like Gallopo, Magliopo actually sort of like lays down. You have to train it.
It's one of the. I was going to say, is this terraced? Are these terraced vineyards or?
Almost all terraced.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And when you
which
see,
is interesting when to you see when you're there.
Yeah, when you see them on the side that leans towards the Adriatic, Tiro, that coast, you see the reds that you get from Gallopo are much more sort of like crunchy, bright, almost Selenic. When you get into the rest of the region, they tend to be bigger, denser, fruitier. And literally, the ones from Chiro, you'll do fine with like big grilled fish and other dishes. When you get to the stuff in the rest of the region, then it's funny. Then all of a sudden, then it wants meat. Then it wants lamb, for sure.
Mm-hmm. You're so far south, or furthest south there, really, if you don't include Sicily. Puglia, I can't wait to hear about that because I love the bread from that region, as you were talking about earlier. So.
Well, Puglia is a big, hot, sun-baked region, that's for sure. And grapes that you think of as Zinfandel, I believe the origin for at least two of those grapes are there. Primitivo is one. Susa Maniello, I think, is one of the others. There are several grapes, and I'm not a botanist who's going to test all the plants, but I have pretty reasonable tasting experience. I believe there are a couple of different grape variety versions, or maybe it's a different clone of Primitivo that you see in California, but big, fruity, rich red wines. That's really the thing down there. Negromaro, probably the most age-worthy and probably noblest, if that actually counts mm-hmm. for something. Negromaro, historically, there's a lot of bitter stuff. You know, the name literally means black bitter. But there now there's some growers like Menhir, Cantina Menhir, that make the big, rich, modern style. And that's going to be 15-16% alcohol. There's no way to avoid that and make that wine correctly.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe a little more interesting contemplation wine than it is for the table, let's say.
Okay. Very good.
Contemplation wine is, I think, what my father has with chocolate chip cookies.
And now we're going up the eastern coast, so now we're in Abruzzo.
Abruzzo is, it's funny, all I ever think of is sheep, sheep, and sheep, and sheep.
Ooh, okay.
Because it's all hills, pretty much. You have a couple of coastal towns, but it immediately becomes hills.
Mm-hmm.
And Abruzzo and Molise, essentially, which is a little tiny region alongside Abruzzo, just south of it, grow a lot of the same stuff. Molise does better with Sangiovese because of the soil type. Abruzzo does best with Montepulciano d'Abruzzo,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the more confusing things. Montepulciano is a grape. Montepulciano is also a town.
Yeah,
the
that
town
is confusing.
Montepulciano is in Tuscany.
Mm-hmm.
They do not grow that grape.
Okay.
Okay, there they grow Sangiovese, and it's called Vino Nobile di Montepulciano in the town of Montepulciano, the noble wine of Montepulciano. Down south, along the coast there, they grow Montepulciano the grape, and they'll call it Montepulciano from Abruzzo, d'Abruzzo.
Great.
So I.
Oh, like, goody.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, sorry. All that being said.
It's not your fault.
It's not. It's very particular, right?
It's very particular.
The it's a little tidbit. It's probably the best rosé in Italy. Usually comes out of Abruzzo. It's a Sangiovese rosé made from Montepulciano d'Abruzzo.
And Pescara is there in that region?
Pescara is one of the towns.
That's exciting. And then we move up to Marche.
Marche, it used to almost be a joke.
I don't remember ever going there. Have we been there? Or have you been there?
I've been there.
Okay.
It always used to be almost a joke that there's no good wine from Marche.
Well, that's not very nice.
No, it's not very nice. Yeah. I think that there is actually an important, using that word, mm-hmm. white wine from Marche, Verdicchio. And it's grown on a couple of different sites, that particular grape.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, at its best, big, firm, a little bit fruity, acidic, sharply acidic white wine that does well with salty things, especially fish. When I think of like fish with lemon and capers, when I think of like pickled fish and sweet onions, when I think of seafood risotto, that kind, I think of Verdicchio.
Okay.
There's a red wine that is being made in better quality as time goes along that I think people will see more of in the States that they haven't over time. And the Lacrima di Moro, the Alba, which is a name that's probably going to kill its marketing ability forever. That's a red that has almost this like blueberry, like crunchy blueberry character to it that is really interesting, that does well with a lot of antipasti, just general antipasti, and olives in particular.
Emilia Romagna,
it's two names because it's really two regions. Emilia, that's where you find, that's up towards Parma, and that's really grain and pig country and cheese country, and that's what that is about.
Sounds like a good country.
Romagna is along the coast. And very green. It would actually kind of remind you of Maryland as far as looking around at the setting, for sure, more than anywhere else in Italy. It's more humid than a lot of other places. Humidity is not so great for wine growing. This is not a great wine growing region historically. There's one winery that's very interesting, that it's always worth tasting their things, and Fattoria di Paradiso, literally the farm of paradise. They grow peacocks as well as wine.
Wow.
It's a very unusual place. It's definitely worth a visit if you're in that area at all. But they grow Barbarossa, is a native grape that they discovered more or less. They have a wine museum there at the estate. That's very particular red wines. I don't know if they rank as important, but they are age worthy.
All right. Moving up to the Veneto.
The Veneto's got a big tradition because, one, it was a wealthy area. And wealth means that you can afford better wine. So you're asking someone close by to grow you better wine.
Mm-hmm.
The area around Verona, around Lake Garda, the famous white wine region, Suave Classico, is the best zone. The red wine region, Valpolicella, is the best zone. The one that everyone seems to want, and Suave is very underutilized and the best producers. That's good food flexibility and is the best asparagus wine in the world for sure. Valpolicella, that gets turned into Amarone della Valpolicella. And we seem to love that as Americans, which is red wine that is made from the grapes that have been dried a bit, very concentrated, alcoholic, big raisiny flavor profile. Makes it very easy to drink and almost like a soft drink way. Can be very profound, but for me personally, I don't love that with food. I love that as it's, like I said before, a contemplation wine.
Mm-hmm. And Friuli?
Friuli is in some ways a little bit, as a growing region, a little bit like Bordeaux climactically, but the soil types are so different. There's a loamy sense to the terroir, whereas in Bordeaux there's always that the graphite or the iron, a very particular mineral compound comes through in the red wines. Here it's always a loamy compound that comes through. They're still struggling to grow really interesting reds for the most part. There's only one great grower, Moschioni, that grows out there. His stuff is amazing. The whites, things that are the size of California whites, like if you like big California Sauvignon Blanc, a big Sauvignon Blanc from Friuli is going to work for you. They're very interesting whites being produced by growers that are trying to do things in ancient traditions like Grosvenor, that from all kinds of native varietals, and doing them in ceramic vessels That's all very interesting and all very expensive to deal with, but there's a lot of energy in the winemaking there right now.
Trentino Alto Adige.
For me, it's summertime wine. That's like the best porch wine in the world is the stuff from the whites from the Alto Adige. So it's mostly Middle European grapes. And so you see but big dry Gewürztraminer from up there, which is very fun to have with, say you're grilling pork chops or something and it's hot out. That's a great thing to do. You will find Grüneveltliner. You'll find Kerner is a grape from up there that I can think of almost no one that I put that in front of that people don't love Kerner. But they're reds from up there as well, and they're tasty, Lagrein and Schiava. But it's the whites that are the important thing. Trentino, just south of there, there's a grape, Troldo Rotigliano, which is a bit of a mouthful, which is a relative of Syrah. There are a couple of wineries making very good Troldo Rotigliano, and that's pretty big, satisfying red wines that have like almost spice character to them that I appreciate.
And probably the last northern region, Lombardia.
Lombardia, well, they make the fizzy reds that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of wine that's grown. The most important sparkling wines, Franciacorta, are grown up there that are made in the Champagne style. You will see a red wine that's very interesting made up in the valley right on the Swiss border, Valtellina. That's from Nebbiolo. They make both white and red wine from Nebbiolo up there. And they have a dried wine tradition older than Valpolicella does up there as well, called Sforzato. And I think people almost always love that stuff when we show them Sforzato.
And the last two regions, Sicily and Sardinia, off the coast of Italy.
Sicily, you have pretty diverse traditions, and you have really hot growing regions. I would say you have Mount Etna and everywhere else. On Mount Etna, you grow two ancient grapes that are really important and will age well and are lovely. It's things the size of Pinot Noir. And Nurella Mascalese and Nurella Cappuccio are the grapes up there. The rest of the country, you see Primitivo, you see big white varietals and Sonica. There's a lot to talk about. There's honestly, if you like California Chardonnay, there's Chardonnay made in that style in Sicily that's pretty darn good. There's a couple of Fianos made almost like a big California Chardonnay that are pretty darn good.
How does the food change there?
The food is enormously diverse in Sicily, and you see a mix of the most mixed palate, let's say, of bitter, sweet, salty, sour, fatty, all mixed like crazy because you have all the cultures that land there from whether it's what feels like a Middle Eastern influence or Greek influence or mm-hmm. it's super interesting cooking.
And Sardinia?
Sardinia, starting with food, it's not very particularly complex. That's the other place. It's sheep, 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 and sheep. Historically there, unlike Sicily, everyone lives inside the island, not along the coasts. And so the traditional cooking is much more lamb and chickpeas, and that's kind of the what you see for the most part, and good bread.
It's an amazing place to drive around.
Absolutely. The grapes, Cannonau is the name of Grenache that's grown there. That can be fantastic. There's a producer de Torri that is one of the best wine growers I've ever seen in my life. He makes gigantic red wines. That's the wine visit. You don't leave until after the nap after the visit because you can't drive, even when you spit. The alcohols are big on those wines.
Okay.
And Vermentino is the white that's the most interesting that's there. And that can be done in a pretty big, rich style as well.
It's a beautiful place.
That's
a beautiful country.
A giant subject matter that's foolish to tackle as a little quick wine primer, but hopefully it's a quick cheat sheet for a few people. That's all we have time for on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Thanks for listening.